Welcome to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Lauren Larson. My guest today is Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Indian Health Service. So I'll start by asking you, in your role as Acting Director and CIO, how do you support the IHS mission?
Well, our office provides the information technology infrastructure for the operations of Indian Health Service across the country. And so Indian Health Service provides direct healthcare services at hospitals and clinics in 35 states. And many of those are operated directly by the federal government, and most of them are actually operated by tribal programs. So we provide the technology services such as a wide area network, email services, security for the network, that sort of thing for all the federal sites and for any tribal sites that want to use the services that we provide. We also provide a health information system that underlies and supports the operations at these facilities for everything they do for healthcare, from patient registration and scheduling, electronic medical record, billing cycle applications, all that sort of thing. So we are involved on the strict IT side as well as the HIT side, supporting the mission of Indian Health Service, which is to improve the health status of American Indian and Alaska Native people to the highest level.
You've been at IHS for 25 years, and you've served a number of different roles. You've been a family physician and a commissioned officer in the U.S. Public Health Service. How have these roles prepared you for the job that you do today?
I started out as a math and physics major in college and subsequently went to graduate school in biomedical engineering and then to medical school, where I developed an interest in family medicine and primary care. I was supported in medical school by a program called the National Health Service Corps, which had a payback obligation, and at the time I got out of my residency and fellowship, I have a master's degree in public health, the options were to go into private practice or to go into the Indian Health Service. And the Indian Health Service was a natural choice for me. And so came into the Indian Health Service in 1987, and in the 25 years since then have served as a medical officer in family practice, as well as a medical director for a couple of healthcare facilities in South Dakota and Minnesota. And evolved naturally back into health information technology because of my technology background. And for the past 10 years, I've been involved with the Indian Health Service Office of Information Technology, first as the lead on the electronic health record project, beginning in about 2002, 2003, subsequently as the investment manager or program manager for our health information system, which is called the Resource and Patient Management System, and in the past year as the chief information officer for the agency.
How does IHS fit into the bigger picture of HHS, and what are some of the unique challenges that your agency faces?
Well, the Indian Health Service is a fairly small agency when you talk about budget within HHS, about a $5 billion annual budget, and is the only HHS agency that provides direct healthcare services on a wide scale. As I've mentioned, we have healthcare facilities in 35 states. There's 45 hospitals that are supported by the Indian Health Service, either federal or tribal, and several hundred clinic facilities ranging from large multi-specialty clinics to very tiny Alaska Village clinics in the bush in Alaska. So the challenges of that are that we're very widely distributed, we're very rural, and we have a population that has a lot of health challenges. We have an important mission to improve healthcare, and delivering that mission across the entire country basically on a very modest budget is a significant challenge. Within my office, we have the responsibility for making sure that the technology services that support those programs are effective and capable and reliable. So in parts of the country with not very good broadband coverage, not very good connectivity, difficulty with consistency of power supply, that sort of thing, it can make the job pretty difficult at times.
So how do you meet those challenges when you're moving towards a more fully online system and the people you're trying to reach just aren't there yet?
Well, that is difficult because a lot of it is not under our control at the IHS. When you talk about broadband, that's really under the control of the local telephone companies actually getting those services, those broadband lines out to the facilities and indeed out to the homes in those locations. The Federal Communications Commission has been very supportive and has been very vocal about advocating for better broadband coverage in these rural areas. In some places, the tribes are taking a lot of initiative to increase the coverage, but it's not uniform across the country. So when you talk about the access to broadband services, many of the facilities in IHS and tribal programs have only a T1 line, which is not a very robust connection to the outside world. That influences how we provide electronic health record, for example, to them. The IHS electronic health record is at present a locally deployed client-server type of application because that's the way it was developed in the first place, but it's difficult to get beyond that in some of these places because if you try to have an externally hosted solution, you're not going to have the connectivity that will allow it to stay up and stay reliable. So one of the solutions that we have for this connectivity issue is simply providing technologies that work locally without depending on that. The problem with that is that as we move into meaningful use, electronic prescribing, health information exchange, access to patient information online, that sort of thing, it does become difficult for these small rural communities with not very good connectivity to be successful with those types of technologies.
We'll take a short break now. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, as well as health officials, medical professionals, and the public, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest today is Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Indian Health Service. So my next question is, how important is interagency or even interdepartmental collaboration, and what are some best practices?
It's extremely important to us. In health IT especially, the IHS has had a very long collaborative relationship with the Veterans Administration because our health information system in IHS is in large part based on the VA's system. And so we've been fortunate over the years in being able to leverage the VA development in the VISTA system to provide the core functionality for RPMS. And then we've used our resources to create value-added features to support the population and public health needs of IHS, as well as things like child health and women's health and so forth that the VA doesn't do that much of. We wouldn't be where we are today in health IT without that relationship with the VA. And because of that, we're actually an extremely interested stakeholder in the current VA-DOD interagency EHR initiative, because the outcomes of that work will have real impacts on IHS and the tribal users of our systems. We also work closely with other agencies. We're heavily engaged with CMS on the ICD-10 transition, and we have an agreement with the Health Resources and Services Administration to work toward harmonization of clinical quality measures for our two agencies. We have relationships with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on epidemiology and immunization data exchange. We have a shared data center with the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Albuquerque. We participate with the Federal Health Architecture Group that's run out of the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology. So we have a lot of relationships with agencies within HHS and especially with the VA.
When you were on the show last year and you spoke with Jason Miller, you talked about some of your short-term goals and specifically the move to ICD-10. Give us an update on where you're at.
We're still moving to ICD-10. We've completed the analysis of all the software changes that will be that will need to be made, and we've pretty well locked down the requirements. There are about 38 packages within the RPMS suite that need to be modified, and development has begun on those. Let's see, we've also just completed the first pass-through of all the different taxonomies or groups of codes that are used in our reports and our decision support and quality measure logic. There's about 750 taxonomies in RPMS that need to be mapped from ICD-9 to ICD-10, and we're starting to review those mappings with our subject matter experts. We've had a number of national training events, and we're planning more of those. We're working with the IHS area offices, our regional offices across the country, to help them identify the in-depth training opportunities for their coders and their billers and their medical records staff. The decision by Health and Human Services to delay the compliance date for ICD-10 by 1 year, it was originally October 1, 2013, now it's October 1, 2014, that has taken a little bit of the pressure off, but there is a lot of work ahead, and so we continue to work on the ICD-10 project, and of course we have plenty of other things to keep us entertained as well.
Where are you in terms of electronic health records, and what's on the horizon?
We have had health information technology within IHS for three decades at least. We launched the first components of our health information system, which is called, as I mentioned before, the Resource and Patient Management System, or RPMS, in 1984. And we started doing electronic performance auditing with the diabetes management system in the late 80s. And even before we went to fully electronic records, we were using our patient care component to give providers comprehensive patient health summaries with problem lists, medication lists, screening, lab results, clinical reminders. And we've been using the RPMS to automate clinical quality and performance reporting for over 10 years. And then we've had a fully functional electronic health record system since 2005. We have additional capabilities for population health and public health and practice management, revenue cycle, that sort of things. We started with 7 test sites for the RPMS electronic health record in 2004, and now we're at over 325 locations that use the RPMS EHR for some aspect of healthcare. RPMS is the first and still only government-sponsored electronic health record to be certified under the meaningful use criteria. So IHS and tribal hospitals and eligible providers around the country are qualifying for meaningful use incentive payments from Medicare and Medicaid. Our continued development in the EHR is intended to keep us current with the certification requirements for meaningful use. So the new certification requirements for 2014 certification were just published in August, and we're involved in analyzing those requirements and proceeding with the development to ensure that RPMS continues to be certified. There's a lot of new requirements in Stage 2 Meaningful Use for health information exchange and patient engagement, among others. So we'll be pretty busy just doing Meaningful Use for the next year to 2 years, and then there will be Stage 3 after that. We also are working on ICD-10, as I mentioned. We're doing significant improvements on the practice management side and our billing cycle applications. So we stay very busy trying to keep our systems up to date and capable for the needs of federal and tribal users across the country.
We've got to take another short break now. You're listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, as well as health officials, medical professionals, and the public, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International. I'm Lauren Larson. My guest today is Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Indian Health Service. October is Cybersecurity Month. What are some main concerns at IHS in terms of cybersecurity?
Well, I would distinguish between security and privacy in this discussion. We do run a wide area network for the agency. We comply with HHS security policies around that. It is a real challenge because there is a lot of risk out there. We've done a lot of work to harden the network, and we continue to work on that. The department and the government in general, through Homeland Security, continue to come up with new requirements, and we continue to address those. We have a strong security team in IHS, both federal and contractor staff, that assist us with that. It's an interesting issue for us because we're not just a federal network. We support a lot of tribal programs, in other words, non-federal programs. And so we have to enforce security policies while still supporting programs that are off the federal network. From the standpoint of electronic medical records and privacy, patient privacy, that's obviously a big concern as well. And we continue to enforce policies as well as software development best practices to ensure that the records are safe. We have policies that go right down to the user level, just like any medical records policy at a facility, whether it's a paper chart or an electronic chart. You have to enforce best practices and have both personnel and supervisory approaches as well as technological approaches to protecting that privacy. Clearly, as we move toward more exchange of information, such as through electronic prescribing or health information exchange, through the Nationwide Health Information Network, we have to comply with the policies and protocols of those systems as well. And we do. We know what we need to be doing, and we enforce it.
How has IHS adapted to the current budget climate? How do you continue to find the means to make the changes necessary to meet these requirements and comply with new policies?
Tight budgets are really nothing new to the Indian Health Service. We are accustomed to doing a lot with a little over the years. And that said, we've had bipartisan recognition of that fact. So in the past couple of years, the Secretary and the administration have actually been quite supportive of Indian Health Service, and the agency has not faced the kinds of reductions that have been seen elsewhere in the government. We've been fortunate in that respect. But of course, we are always looking for ways to reduce costs, and in our office in the technology arena, we've done a fair amount of things like server virtualization and data center consolidation. As an example, I mentioned a relationship that we have with the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Albuquerque. We basically combined, co-located our data centers to reduce overhead costs for both agencies in doing that. We're continuing to look at other opportunities for virtualization, cloud, and data center consolidation. On other aspects, we've looked at travel. For example, we've historically done a lot of training on-site at facilities across the country. While we still do that, we've moved a lot of our training into virtual classroom types of training, reaching many more people with a lot less travel. So we're always working with a budget that isn't enough, and so we're always looking for ways to make it go further.
How is technology helping you provide better health care?
When you're just looking at a patient and a patient chart, that tells you about that patient, but it doesn't tell you about everybody that I see. And with the technology that we have and that is available today, I can bring up all of my patients, and I can say, well, how many of these women haven't had their mammogram? How many of these women haven't had their pap smear? How many men with cardiovascular disease aren't on a lipid-lowering agent? These kinds of things really transform our ability to care for populations of patients as opposed to individual patients. And then you can actually put benchmarks up there for people so that you can say, look, you're doing really well in this aspect of care, but did you know that we've got a target of 70% of our patients are going to have this intervention that are eligible for it. You're only at 40%. You need to be thinking about this part of your practice and improving that part of your practice to improve the services overall to your patients. It's really important to have this kind of visibility into practices. And I think it's an eye-opener a lot of times for physicians, nurse practitioners, other healthcare providers, to believe that you're really providing good care and you're really taking care of the patients, you're really getting those screening tests done, you're getting the colonoscopies done and that kind of stuff. But then when you see the data that the system can give you on your whole population, you realize you've got places that you can improve. And since the industry is going more toward a pay-per-performance model as opposed to a pay-by-service model, the ability to evaluate performance and to show performance is really important.
Special thanks to my guest, Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at the Indian Health Service. You've been listening to Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This month's agency is the Department of Health and Human Services. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.